Welcome to Cyber Chat, sponsored by Looking Glass. Here's today's moderator, Sean Kelly.
Welcome and thanks for joining us. My guest today is Ronald Nielsen, Executive Director for Public Sector at Looking Glass. Ron, thank you for joining me today.
Hey, thanks for having me. Great invite.
Ron, you have a background in Army intelligence and the intelligence community, but tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. I joined the Army back in the early 80s. Started my career as in the intelligence programs as a linguist and then an analyst. And I guess luckily for me, I got a lot of diverse experiences in my 21 years when I retired. That I rounded out my career leading offensive cyber attack teams for conventional and unconventional networks. So a really good experience, a lot of diversity, which is something I thrive on.
And when you look at your past life in the intelligence community and as it segued into more of a hardcore IT cybersecurity, what were the similarities that you felt like you could bring over and help improve that environment?
Well, so when I first got involved with, I guess, IT, I was on the I first got involved on the nefarious side. And then later I went into what I would call more programming, web hosting, and internet service provider work. And then finally, as an internet service provider in Germany, I got to experience the opposite end of the nefarious work. And you know, we were compromised. So that's back in the 90s. And I guess from that period of time, it was the internet and the IT that supported it, web services, was just a very, very immature discipline. And so I thought some of the planning, intelligence, kind of knowledge, and then, getting organized could, professionalize or more or less mature or stabilize services in cyber. So that's kind of what I've been focusing on.
Which side did you like better, the defense or the offensive side?
Oh, the offense, easy. I mean, hands down. See, on the defense side, they can point out your deficiencies, right, if you get hacked. On the offensive side, no one knows if you didn't do good. So you kind of always are a winner, on that side. So I think, they're both a challenge. So I don't know. I mean, I don't think either one's better. They're both quite interesting. And because of the change in technology and, operational developments in tech and organizations, they're all very diverse. They change rapidly. I mean, so you get to be agile, be on your toes. It's fun.
Yeah, and I think you bring up a great point about maturity. When you're thinking about cybersecurity, what does a mature organization look like, or what does an immature organization look like?
So that's a good question. And there's so many possible answers, I guess. So just a quick kind of an overview. I mean, I've worked with companies where the cybersecurity personnel don't know the mission of the company. So when you think about that, what is the key terrain? What are you trying to defend? What's what's the pot of gold? Where is it at the end of that rainbow in that organization? What makes the company successful from a data perspective or IT perspective? And most cybersecurity companies, even today that you consider mature, don't seem to align their defensive practice to what, the high value assets or the terrain they have to absolutely hold to keep the company successful. On the other hand, some organizations don't have cybersecurity, they have IT, and they are different disciplines. And then I guess when, you kind of consider the mid-tier, and I think that's where most companies or most organizations kind of find themselves today. They're semi-mature, but sometimes they buy tech they don't know how to operate, or they get it over their head, or they only buy tech that they're familiar with, so they're not as diverse. So there's so many different potential issues. I think the best thing for a company is to understand, what level of maturity and workforce do they have? And then ask themselves, are they focused on what's important to the organization to defend? Because there's more to defend against than there are people and talent.
No, I think you did a great job of explaining what the current environment looks like, right? I mean, it's like Baskin-Robbins. We have 31 flavors. And, you know, and I always say that these things start at the leadership. And so it starts with the CISO, if they have one. And as you kind of alluded to, some don't. How do we start making sure that the CISOs of the future are ready for these challenges? Because a company is only going to be as mature as their leadership can bring them.
Yeah, it's kind of a funny thing. I got to RSA practically every year, and there's a community of us CISOs, and we call it the Ronin, you know, the 47 Ronin, because we're all destined to die and get fired. You know, job duration in the position is not long, because at the first sign of failure, you move on. So with that as a background, it's hard to really mature that position or that organizational function when you don't apply some level of stability to it. And so, again, I think most CISOs are coming from the tech side and not thinking operationally, like what makes the company money. Most are taking an approach of, we've got to defend against X, and so they buy Y, and Z happens. So again, they're perceived as unsuccessful or wasted funding. As a cybersecurity professional, as a CISO leading a team, we really got to do a better job at conveying the mission and how our cybersecurity efforts are designed, again, to protect the organization, its revenue, its goals, its objectives, its infrastructure, and be a more holistic cybersecurity professional. I think we have to adapt to not protecting against ones and zeros, but why are we defending in the first place? What's the outcome we want? And we haven't gotten there. I'm starting to see it now in the community, but it's an emerging trend.
I think that's a great point. And as the community does mature, are you seeing that board of directors or executive leadership within the organizations are able to understand, or even at a place that the CISO can have a conversation?
Oh yeah, some are. I mean, I've met with some commercial groups, and the environment and the collaboration, interaction amongst the C-suite, whether the CISO's on the board or not, or reports through like the CIO or CSO. There are some organizations that, you know, think about this mission holistically. And that's, again, a maturation of just generic organizational leadership that has to take place. Organizations which don't depend upon technology, let's say maybe construction, and I'm not trying to pick on the construction folks because there's brilliant folks there too that do this, but more broadly, I would say maybe, you know, restaurant, hospitality, and construction, where the dependence and reliance or the upbringing on technology is not as strong, you see a little bit weaker, you know, integration or interoperability.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit more when we come back from the break. My guest today is Ronald Nielsen, Executive Director for Public Sector at Looking Glass. I'm your moderator, Sean Kelly, on CyberChat, sponsored by Looking Glass on Federal News Network.
A new kind of cyber war is being waged. Networks are dynamic and borderless, and adversaries are learning your defense tactics. Organizations need a whole new approach to cybersecurity. The good news, Looking Glass Cyber Solutions is on the front lines with over 20 years of battle-tested tradecraft, protecting global enterprises and government agencies from cyber threats with next-generation technologies. Their comprehensive portfolio of scalable platforms, software-defined advanced threat response, and deep bench of security analysts levels the playing field. Visit LookingGlassCyber.com.
Welcome back to CyberChat, sponsored by Looking Glass on Federal News Network. My guest today is Ronald Nielsen, Executive Director for Public Sector at Looking Glass. I'm your moderator, Sean Kelly. Ron, before we went on break, we were talking about a defensive posture and boards understanding, CISOs or security executives being able to have that conversation. You know, but we're definitely in a different place than when you mentioned earlier that you were when you were at ISPs and internet, you know, and now security isn't a bolt-on. It's not a perimeter defense. It's a data, and it's a very complex world. You know, how have we gotten to where we are today?
Well, you know, I think this is no different than other emergent technologies and disciplines. They generally mature unimpeded by, you know, existing or past common practice. They mature independently within an organization as something new or novel. And at some point in time, and I think we're there, many companies are well along, government entities as well, that they've now understood that they really need to be integrated, joined at the hip. It's not a service that they're, you know, having or an additional duty kind of a thing. It's a core factor of a business's ability to be successful. So that's just going to take time. It took so in the internet, and cyber's on the way.
So technology, you know, we talked a lot about it, right? And we talked a lot about different ways to mature, but we have services, we have the leadership, people, process, technology. Let's talk a little bit about technology. A lot of tools promise a lot, but oftentimes improperly deployed or just don't live up to the hype. How do we avoid this? Or how does a cyber executive avoid this?
Well, you know, so I think organizationally there's two primary paths that CISOs or cyber leaders take. One, they tend to migrate towards technology they know and understand, which is habitually old, or, you know, from a maturity, it's very well established, kind of like a firewall. We've had firewalls for a long time. And then another is what I call the shiny toaster leadership, which if you go to RSA or any of these conferences, you know, the first year was non-signature based, then it became behavioral, then it became machine learning. And now, of course, it's artificial intelligence. And I just call that shiny toaster. It's chasing the pipe dream. Most of those technologies, for a number of reasons, either aren't mature enough or the organization is not mature enough to incorporate them into their business cycle, into their day-to-day, you know, routine, and extract that value. So, you know, an AI tool finds something. How do you determine if it's accurate? And so you got to match the technology to the maturity of the organization. And you have to try to get off of old things that have been proven ineffective or that adversaries know well enough how to get around. So it's kind of complex, but it's doable.
It is. So when you're talking to a cyber executive in the commercial sector or the government sector, and you're helping them ask the right questions, what does that series of questions or things they need to look at look like?
So there's been a lot of groups that have adopted like a threat assessment or a cyber assessment kind of a mentality, and it could be done organically by the organization or through a third party as a service or activity. And those are really interesting. Again, I'd like to have people get more broadly focused on what is the objective first is what is the corporate sweet spot? How does that sweet spot, whether it's a server or database or people's, you know, credit card numbers or social security numbers or HIPAA data, how then can an adversary get at it? And so that's a new thing. Government efforts called DODCAR and GovCAR have started to focus on not vulnerabilities, but what does the adversary have in their toolbox, you know, their quiver of arrows they possess, and how do those attacks look? And so instead of focusing on the 14 million devices, let's focus on the 57 different types of attacks and get good at that. And then another focus is you determine risk through understanding your vulnerabilities and the threat. So we just talked about threat. I was testifying to the Armed Services Committee, and I was surprised that one of the other panelists, basically they didn't do blocking and tackling. And earlier you asked me a question about my background. So we never took a tank out unless we knew its oil and fuel and in the process of the engine, the tracks, the barrel, the ammunition. We called it preventive maintenance checks and services. We knew our vehicle. And that's in cyber, that's knowing the vulnerabilities in your, you know, architecture and what assets you have. So when you put those two together, the vulnerabilities you may possess and how the adversary comes after you, the threat, now you really build a risk profile. And once you have that, pick tools that lower your risk to your critical data or operations, not just a tool because it's something you know or it's shiny. Does that make sense?
No, it does. And I guess the thought that's coming across my mind and routinely comes across my mind is, why do you think that's a straightforward approach and it's the same approach I take? Why are folks struggling with that approach?
They're thinking about it too much, maybe. They're overthinking it. Many people act like this is some magic or, you know, mystical kind of a of a discipline, and it's really not. It's just new. So we'll get better at it as a community and make it part of how we do business and take the mysticism out of cybersecurity. Let's just do the right things, common sense approach, and that's going to help us in 90% of cyber incidents.
You mentioned testifying in front of Congress. Do we need more legislation, or is that the wrong thing in your opinion?
You know, legislators do great things, and they strive very hard every day to find ways to be helpful. So I think there's always a time and a proper place, if nothing else, to keep informed and keep collaborative and share ideas. Will regulations be required? No, we didn't need seatbelts one day, and now we have seatbelts in cars. So sometimes things that maybe didn't make sense, we need regulation for, we need help from the legislature. So I think we just need to keep the collaboration and engagement going.
My guest today is Ronald Nielsen, Executive Director for Public Sector at Looking Glass. I'm your moderator, Sean Kelly, on CyberChat, sponsored by Looking Glass on Federal News Network.
A new kind of cyber war is being waged. Networks are dynamic and borderless, and adversaries are learning your defense tactics. Organizations need a whole new approach to cybersecurity. The good news, Looking Glass Cyber Solutions is on the front lines with over 20 years of battle-tested tradecraft, protecting global enterprises and government agencies from cyber threats with next-generation technologies. Their comprehensive portfolio of scalable platforms, software-defined advanced threat response, and deep bench of security analysts levels the playing field. Visit Looking Glass Cyber.
Welcome back to CyberChat, sponsored by Looking Glass on Federal News Network. My guest today is Ronald Nielsen, Executive Director of Public Sector at Looking Glass. Ron, you know, we've been talking a lot about maturing conversations, maturing organizations, and the next generation of tools is going to be a big part as we continue to have a cybersecurity talent debt. How do we prepare for the next generation of tools that are out there?
Well, that's a good question. You know, again, I said earlier, you have to understand your workforce and their capacity. When I was advising or doing some consulting, or I was in the government working in the Department of Defense, working with the Department of Homeland Security. And, you know, even at that time, I think there were 300 personnel short. This is, you know, 4 or 5 years ago. So the talent that we need in the volume is not going to catch up to us anytime soon. So when you, again, look at your environment, what do you need to protect, and then the tools that you select, you can have two options. One can be organic, your own labor, and that makes sense in a lot of ways. And then some other tasks, maybe like large volume data intelligence or data aggregation with machine learning and those types of technologies that maybe require almost subject matter expertise, then maybe that is a service. Maybe, you know, economies of scale, the service can be provided, and there's a number of companies. We don't do this, but there are companies that do this and do it quite well. So there are different models. I think when you go back to the tools sometimes can be wonderful, but if you're not going to trust what the tool tells you and then use its knowledge to help defend your network, and then you apply labor to it again to review everything that the tool did, you're kind of defeating the purpose again of automation and machine learning and, you know, the advanced technologies that are available to make your life easier. So again, matured organization, pick the tools for the labor you have, and maybe, you know, they got to find some service providers for advanced techniques they're not comfortable with yet.
I think you touched on something awesome, which is the trust. Why do you think there's still a level of distrust? Is it that they don't know it was implemented correctly? I mean, they chose a product. Why don't they trust it?
Well, I don't think cybersecurity professionals are basically trusted, because when there's a compromise, you know, they've been trained not to expose it, not to say their company was compromised or the org. Because if you show that you were compromised, you know, you've demonstrated that you in a sense that you failed. And as a community, we have to start thinking of it differently, because this really inhibits data sharing. If at first I was compromised, well, the average time an adversary was on a network, I think 3 years ago, was 317 days. So 10 months. And they were never detected. So when an organization detects an adversary, they should be applauded, because they're probably the first group that's actually ever found it. But instead, we denigrate them and tear them apart and, you know, dock their pay and fire people. So that inhibits not only the performance, but it really inhibits our ability to share data amongst organizations. When people find an adversary, we should all salute them, maybe come up with an award, you know, in DC for them.
Yeah, but I also think that contributes to what you talked about earlier, which is the CISO turnover or the security team turnover, is they do feel beat down, they do feel stressed, and that all leads to it. So I agree, that's a paradigm that we definitely need to change.
Right, and so again, maybe, you know, we can do that. I think we are maturing. Everybody, you know, I've even heard a mantra lately that's, we all know the adversaries in our networks now, which is, it's not a terrible statement. It's an acknowledgement of the potential reality of it. And then now let's acknowledge how to find them and get them out. You know, again, so this is more a maturity or maturation of the community and the cybersecurity defensive operations environment. It's a good thing. So I think we're getting better.
No, I agree. But I think you also raised a great point, which is we talk a lot about the mature organization and having those mature conversations. But we also have a great deal of smaller agencies, smaller organizations, small businesses that aren't mature. But yet, they're going to be the weakest spot in the defense if they're connected. And we all know we all live in this connected world. So how do we start getting those organizations that aren't mature ready for those next generation of tools?
Well, you know, in the beginning, the small businesses, even today, they don't have the ability to provide their own internet access, and we use ISPs. I mean, why couldn't a similar system with, you know, cybersecurity services or SOC service providers that don't defend their own network or just one network, maybe they defend 100 business customers. And because each business is only putting in a small amount of money, you know, relevant to the defense they receive, the economics would be potentially better. And the labor shortage, the talent could be appreciably better. It's nothing I don't think the community is starting to deal with, but most small businesses or small corporations or small local government, education departments, police departments, they can't possibly be thought of to defend their own communications. So we have to find a new way to do it as a community somehow, crowdsourcing in a way with smaller monetary features, I think.
What do you think as the long pole in the tent to be successful in defending organizations against adversary, let's say today, and then let's talk about it in 5 years?
So I think earlier, know what you're trying to defend, align your resources that you have, and make the best use of them. In 5 years, I don't think the mission changes. The techniques may change marginally, but it's going to be the same mission. Let's get mature and defend the company's success by fighting against an adversary.
Do you think that at the rate that we're growing in technology, that the challenges will be radically different, or do you think we're still blocking and tackling the way we need to today?
Oh, I don't foresee anything major disruption. We're doing great with some blocking and tackling, two-factor authentication, data sharing, intelligence operations. Kind of, we call it precede the sun intelligence, where we figure out something in Europe and we employ protective measures in America before the sun comes up. So we're good at this. We just have to, again, make it our regimen, make it disciplined and repeatable so it's cost effective.
I'd like to thank today's guest, Ronald Nielsen, Executive Director for Public Sector at Looking Glass. I'm your moderator, Sean Kelly, and you're listening to Federal News Network. For more on this discussion, visit federalnewsnetwork.com and search CyberChat.
Thank you for listening to CyberChat, sponsored by Looking Glass on Federal News Network.